Hey everyone, I'm Chris, and welcome back to Season 3 of the Superpowers Podcast Show. Have you ever asked yourself, what is your superpower? Everyone has a superpower, but most people just don't know what it is. And that's why we're here to uncover it. This podcast will not only share what our guests' unique superpowers are, but also how it helped them both professionally and personally. Superpowers, what's yours? Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Superpowers Podcast. This is Season 3. This is Episode 4. We are pleased and excited to have Katie Shuey, the co-founder and COO of Booster, which I have to call out is actually a C2V portfolio company. It just felt right to say that. It would have felt a little dirty if I didn't kind of give that fun fact. But Katie, welcome. I know you've listened to shows before. I know we've been trying to schedule this for a while. We just learned that you're in Ridgefield, Connecticut. So beyond saying hello, I want to know which episodes of the podcast you've enjoyed. Let's start with that.
I'm a big fan of superpowers. Thanks for having me on, Chris. I love the Deborah Wall episode.
Yeah.
I really just enjoyed the Kara Goldwyn about the hint water. Yeah. I think I told you one time that I didn't go in order. I started with the ladies.
Yeah, you did. You told me that many months ago in the heart of COVID. I remember that.
Yeah. Those were my tops.
Some badass ladies, which you obviously will fall into that category and our listeners will find out why. But yeah, you're lucky when you get to hear, you know, the Susan Hose and Lizzie from Pandora, Allie Wyatt, Girl Boss.
Yeah. I was wondering why they all had such good... They're such good storytellers. And I was like, oh, wait, they're all in marketing.
Yeah.
At some point in their career, and they really know how to package it up.
Yeah. We've had a few founders from C2V join, but we haven't had anyone from our portfolio join in a while. So super happy to have you on. And like I said, we got this dialed up. You're recently moved from, we were talking earlier, pre-recording, from New York City to Ridgefield, Connecticut, and life That's is right. good there.
Yeah. I haven't lived somewhere where I couldn't walk to get milk since I was 11. And I was very nervous about that, but I am loving suburban life.
Yeah, it's good. You know, when I moved out here, I live in Rye, there was always this fear factor of like, what are people like when you leave the city or when you leave Brooklyn? And there's this massive... I'm speaking for myself, this massive concern, like, are they like normal people? Are they fun people? And you learn once you get out here and you make that move, it's just people like you and I that could have met in the city or, you know, West Village for dinner that just for whatever reason, for their family or schools, they wanted something else. But I'm sure you're going to meet some great people out there. What's the best sort of discovery that you have had or your kids have had with moving out of Manhattan or wherever you were?
Skittle ball. So we made this game up. It's baseball that we're playing in the yard. And rather than four bases, it's two. And my nickname at home is Skittles. So we call it Skittle ball because I made it up.
That's amazing.
We've been playing every night with the kids. And man, it is intense. And I am ready for bed at 9.
I love the nickname Skittle, but where did this come from? You were just like, let's shorten this game, but...
I don't know. So Katie, Kittle, Cat, Kit Kat,
it Kittle. Just came together.
None of these names make sense.
So I'm hearing, I feel like I'm hearing a bit of an accent or a twang or something in the distance here through Zoom. What's the quick background of where you grew up and family and that sort of thing? Give us our, you know, just in a couple of minutes, your quick path.
I was born in Germany.
There it is.
But I'm an American. We moved around quite a bit.
Yep.
I think my mom was just too pregnant to birth me anywhere else. And that's where my parents were. Although my father's also German. I lived for a little bit as a child in New York and New Jersey, but I claim to have grown up in Montreal.
Okay.
Because we moved there when I was in middle school. I think that had the most influence on me. I went to a wonderful all-girls private school. And I feel like that shaped me the most out of anything. And I moved from Montreal senior year of high school to Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still very insecure then, and I practiced not having a Canadian accent.
Oh, wow. You actually rehearsed that?
Yes, because if you say, you know, sorry, or yeah. House, people go really crazy.
You know what's funny is we have some commonality. I was born in Finland. That's my mother's side. Dad's American, Canadian, God knows mm-hmm. wherever he came from. And, you know, growing up in Boston, when you meet people, as I've met people in life, they're always extremely disappointed that I don't sound like Ben Affleck or Matt Damon or what. So I started kind of using this. Well, I actually spent a few bucks to go to classes to like rip the accent away. And they're like, oh my God, dude, did you really, you know, and for people that I liked, I tell the truth. And for people that I was like, I'm never going to see again. I'm like, yeah. I paid hundreds of dollars to rip the accent out, but I can't really place it, but you can tell you've traveled and you're not from kind of around the corner. Germany and Montreal. Do you get back? Do you visit either Canada or get back to Europe? Or do you have any sort of family or connections there now?
Yeah. So I lived in Germany for a couple of years. I did an assignment with IBM and I also got married there in Germany and lived there for a few years. Montreal, I don't get back to very often because my family's not there. They retired to Colorado and Arizona. Wonderful. Now you can't go anyway because of COVID.
Right.
Which sucks. Now I'm closer to all of them and dying to get to visit my friends and I can't.
Have you been able to maintain the language? Can you speak a little of anything? Can we put you on the spot for that?
I can speak German very well because I lived there and the kids are bilingual. I noticed, this is a sad fact, but it's true. I'll just cop to it. I think my brain is only capable of one foreign language at a time. Mm-hmm. So I definitely speak French. I went to school that was half in French. I took exams in French. Mm-hmm. But one time when I was living in Germany, I was on assignment for a project in France. And I told all my colleagues, oh, don't worry. I speak French. No problem. And then we went out the night before our big meeting that was going to be in French. And at the restaurant, I tried to order and German came out. And I was like, my brain is betraying me here. And I realized that it only has space for one at a time. I go to Cannes for booster and I figured out that the secret is I'll just read a book in French before I go.
Oh, interesting.
And then
that'll make the brain go there.
Yeah. So one day when I have more headspace and post booster days, I will reintroduce myself to French. But for now, I've learned my lesson to say I don't really speak it.
Maybe if you like sort of switch your German beer to, if you're drinking rosé, your brain goes to French. Who knows?
Yeah.
I wish I could speak a handful. My mother could speak seven in her kind of prime before she got a little bit older, but it's something that I wish
Is she still around? Can you ask her what the secret is to switching tracks in your brain?
I will ask her that on your behalf. And I honestly think it's just some repetition and some practice. So you reference booster, you know, before we talk about booster, how, from a career perspective, did you sort of arrive here? And less about all the jobs that you worked at, but just maybe a little bit more about what was sort of the commonality of where you started or what you thought you wanted to be. And let's go there.
I studied art history and primatology, which is monkeys. So I'm very unqualified for a lot of things. But I had a good dad and he was like, you know what? You're smart. Just study what you want and you'll figure it out. People will give you a chance if you ask them for it. And so I took a job in sales at IBM and I made a lot of money by listening to people and paying attention to them and doing what my dad said, which is just asking for what you want.
Yeah.
But I hated it. I only liked account planning. And then IBM bought PricewaterhouseCoopers and all of these brilliant strategy consultants came with it and they had amazing conversations with clients. You know, I was making sales by just listening and then finding what I thought they needed and then being like, I think you should buy this. Mm-hmm. And they were coming in and saying, we looked at your financials and if this is your future state, here's how you would get there. And not even talking about what to buy. And I loved that and I wanted to be them. Mm-hmm. So I asked around and IBM is a beautiful, wonderful company that's global. So you can do this, right? You just ask around this. I want to join Strategy and Change. And I also wanted to get married and move to Europe. So I was like, I want to move to Germany and I want to join consulting. I asked 10 people, 9 said no, 1 said yes. And I joined a team called Value Creation, which was about writing creative value propositions and bringing them to market in service of improving gross profit. So IBM bought PricewaterhouseCooper for the higher value services, but then their clients were like, cool, we can just get that down to the price that we had before. Mm-hmm. And so that team was about sales and marketing transformation using a value-based sale. And I loved it. And I did that and then took a marketing job because I had children. And then I landed at Yahoo.
What was that change as far as having children and still kind of, you know, this pursuit of a career perspective? Any enlightening kind of words of wisdom for younger entrepreneurs, females in particular, how they may kind of look at that?
Yeah, I think what I learned is there's no shame in a tactical retreat. So I thought I could do it all. I stayed a strategy consultant. I was traveling to clients with an infant. I went back to work after 6 weeks and it was miserable. And then I said, uncle, and I took a job in marketing at IBM, sales enablement, because I could work from home. I could end my meetings at a reasonable time.
Yeah.
So I think if I had
freedom and autonomy.
Exactly. And it wasn't the career path I had laid out with the exact steps I wanted. And it wasn't the HR career path of if you do this, you'll get promoted to partner in the consulting group. But it worked for me. And I think nobody should waste any time feeling ashamed of that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to go in a straight line. And I ended up learning a lot and got the call from Yahoo because of that job. And everything changed once I went to Yahoo. I loved IBM. I was there 13 years, but media is the greatest place on earth. I mean, I think it doesn't get enough credit for all of the smart people that are in media and the tech and the innovation to squeeze a dollar out of an ad sale every step along the way, either creativity in terms of the value chain or creativity in terms of the tech. And also there's just money here. Mm-hmm. I always say that I understood at IBM, there's 400,000 people. If you buy everybody a pencil, it's $1 million. So I get it.
Yeah.
But on my first day of Yahoo, I got like a kit with a yodel and a shirt and they gave me bagels and lunch and a Mac computer. And at the time, Marissa Mayer was CEO.
That's like a bonus.
Oh my God. It was amazing.
At that time. Yeah.
I felt like a princess.
Yeah.
And if you think that doesn't get good work out of people, you're out of your mind.
Yeah.
And the idea was, I remember the person who hired me said, we have a lot of problems here and you are welcome to pick one up and solve it, but you have to solve it. And I was like almost weeping with joy, you know, like I've never heard better news.
Yeah. you don't have to go through some processes or maybe less tape. You know, it's funny when you say that. I grew up in the space too in 99. I never really thought about it until you said that all these companies that were just sort of creating their path, there were no rules, there were no playbooks, there wasn't any judgment. It was like literally like, if you can go solve this problem, please go solve it. And that's very refreshing. I don't think those that grew up at that time probably appreciated how much kind of leeway and creativity that they had, whether they were at Yahoo or anywhere else. You know what I mean?
I absolutely agree. And I think it was one pretty profound lesson. I try to remember people say, oh, everyone remembers how you made them feel, not what you said or did. And I remember how Yahoo at the time made me feel, which was like I was a very talented person that they wanted to be there. And they would give me autonomy and I could just pick up what I wanted. And that's what I try to do at Booster for the people who work there.
Yeah.
Like, just get out of their way.
Yeah. So before we even get to that, what are a couple of the best learnings or insights at your time at Yahoo that you've taken with you in your current role?
Yeah. A big one I would say is how things are in practice rather than in theory. So those years as a strategy consultant, it's all really just on a PowerPoint slide. And when you're talking about designing a process or it works according to the data or the model that we built or ran. And then at Yahoo, my job was, I was on the biz ops team. So the objective is, how can we make more money with what we have? It wasn't about what company could we buy. It's, these are the people, this is the system, this is what's in the bag. How do you organize structure so that you can make more money? You know what you're doing. People, process, systems. And one of my biggest lessons was how the process you design plays out to the people who have to use it, in this case, mm-hmm. salespeople. Mm-hmm. And I actually started to feel really bad about the stuff I wanted to accomplish. I wanted to create a system at Yahoo that was going to be using the data from each sale of what we won and what we lost to create a profile for that account and that contact mm-hmm. of this. They have a propensity towards buying this. And based on their objectives, the advertiser objectives, this is what they should want to buy because they've historically bought things that are endemic, so on and so forth. So stuff that salespeople know because they're doing the job every day, but I wanted the systems to know it. And so I came up with what I thought was just the coolest way of collecting this data. And it was just so clunky because our systems were not great at Yahoo. And I ended up just feeling bad. Like I went on my little road show. I designed the process. I rolled it out with the training. And it was like, so on Fridays, after you've done your job, can you come mm-hmm. back in here and do like this extra, maybe 30, 45 minutes of work for me?
Yeah.
And I was like, this is just not a good idea.
This doesn't scale. So was there any point during this stage of your career that you're like, I'm going to be a co-founder of a company one day. I want to go build something.
Well, yes, and absolutely no. And I have to give a lot of credit to Patrick O'Leary, who's the CEO of Booster, on this. Two things were happening at once. One, I was starting to feel like as you get higher and higher in an organization, even in lovely, lovely media, you get more responsibility, but you also have more constraints. And, you know, somebody will ask you to solve a problem and you'll say, okay, here's my plan. You have to do 1, 2, and 3. 3 doesn't work if you don't do 2. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, cool, we'll do 3. And then, you know, you're like, well, this isn't going to work, but then you're responsible for it. And that was starting to gnaw at me a little bit, where I was like, I don't want to implement somebody else's idea. But I did not consider myself an entrepreneur. I wish I had cool stories for you, like about a lemonade stand that I started, but I'm a total square. You know, I do what I'm supposed to do. I went to school, got good grades, got a good job, worked my way up the ladder. I thought that's just what you do, you know, get married, have 2 kids.
but while I hear you and I respect the transparency and honesty, I do. But still, being co-founding a company, you have to be somewhat disturbed and not all your marbles to want to do this. I've done it a couple of times, did not have the courage to do it the third time. It's too exhausting and difficult. So let's jump to that. You referenced Booster, you referenced Patrick. I think that's a nice segue. So take us to the and Patrick discussion meeting.
Well, there's a personal element and then the Booster part, which is because of this feeling at a corporation. I thought to myself, you know, I'm going to get to the end of my career and say, I was really good. I'll definitely get promoted, make more money, get somewhere high up and know that I did well for myself, but I won't be great. And I need to feel like I get to the end and I did the most that I could do, or I'm not going to be satisfied. So I need to be great, whatever that's going to be. And then almost exactly at the same time, Patrick and I were on the same team at Yahoo, and we were working on these system and process problems, and we were unable to answer very simple questions like, how many RFPs did we get last week? And how are we going to do against the Super Bowl, which wasn't a product? So it's like, I don't know, we'll spin up a Google Doc. And just being able to forecast what's 2021 going to be would be a night and weekend of scrubbing data and calling people and initiating Google Docs. And Patrick and I, we've always gotten along really well. We would just say, like, this doesn't really work. We had Salesforce at Yahoo, spent a ton of money implementing it. That was one of Patrick's roles. And this is where he's the one that pushed me over the edge. He said, you know, I used to work at Siebel and I know how databases work. We can just make one. And I was like, what? You can do that? You know, maybe you're from the West Coast and that's what people do in San Francisco. Yeah, it didn't even occur to me that you could just make a database and have your own SaaS company. I was like, okay. And then I said, okay, well, I don't know how to do that, but I know how to make things work. So if you want to make it, I will come on board. And that's exactly what happened. He made a prototype of Booster and got it to the first client. And then I joined up and have been there ever since. The two of us alone for quite a while with a couple engineers and a sales guy. And now we're a real company.
Katie, what's the what was the yin and yang part of you and Patrick that worked as far as complementary skill sets, or what does that look like?
There's no yin and yang per se. We're both very calm and we're both motivated by positivity and absolutely crushed by negativity. And I think if you're one of those kinds of people, if you find somebody else like that, you should stick with them.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to start a company, or even it's very hard to make a company grow, and staying positive and just taking every problem in stride. Like, okay, well, that didn't work. Well, let's open up the hood and see why, instead of like, oh, that didn't work. And
that's a great, unfortunately for the handful of things I'm good at, that's something that when I was a founder, I sucked at. There's so many things that I got too emotional about or quick reaction. And it's so easy now to look back and be like, man, like I'm a good, you know, maybe a good sort of idea creator, but maybe not the best day-to-day executor. And I'd say that today, operator. But being calm and steady, I think is fantastic advice for anyone sort of kind of thinking through this. Katie, one thing I always find it as an interesting dialogue when we invest in early stage companies and that's kind of the honeymoon stage. And a year later, it's like, cool, you got your money, you got your tech crunch and yay. And then you're like, by the way, this is just like your relationship, with another partner, which is the honeymoon begins to phase. And then the real work kind of kicks in. And I'm curious from your perspective, first of all, for the listeners, what is Booster and the kind of elevator pitch? Cause we haven't done that kind of B, how old is it? And then C, can you reference points in the timeline that were either more challenging or less challenging? Because I'll tell you one thing, and you don't need to go this direction, but I remember like, oh yeah, year six of App Savvy, I'm just gonna like learn how to play golf. Nope, got harder, got more challenging. Never happened. It's just the opposite. It was actually more hours than year one, year two. But anyway, what's your perspective? And if you could answer those. I give you 74 questions, Katie. Let's see how good you are.
I'm going to start with question 73, which is, I can't tell you that there was a part that was harder or easier, because there's always challenges. They just change. I can tell you from a feelings perspective, this past winter felt like what they call the mucky middle. But that's also because it was just, it's been a long, weird, bizarre world for like a year and a half now. And things went crazy at the beginning of the pandemic. Then advertisers and our clients who are publishers recovered. 94% say that they recovered by the end of the year. And so you think, oh, well, everything's perfect now. I don't know, but there's post-drama. And we have a very exciting product roadmap. I took over the product team in the fall. And you would ask the yin and yang. The answer to that question is Patrick is very good at product design and database architecture. And I don't have those core skills. So that's been a learning curve for me, but I tried to just bring what I am good at.
Yeah.
which is people management and just straight up operations. And what I tried to learn early with autonomy, like bring good people in, give them the space to fix the things. So I can't say that there's one part that's been super challenging or easier. They're just new ones.
Yeah. Which probably makes it even somewhat refreshing that you're not always faced with the same set of circumstances. Was there any point? So again, how old is Booster?
5 years. 20. I count from the first client, by the way.
Okay.
Patrick building the product is longer. He has more scars from that, but.
Let's call it 2016-ish. Did gender or any of that ever, was that ever anything that you experienced as a positive or a negative or any sort of appreciation? Or as I'm just getting to know you a little bit, it's almost like, nah, you know, not really. Like
I'm going to be totally honest with you. Not at the beginning, but then Me Too happened and things I never thought to think about, or I wanted to play the game. I wanted to be part of things and I wanted to exist in the world that we had. And then the world changed and I had to process my own thoughts and go back and be like, oh, you know, that probably wasn't okay.
Yeah.
When I'm in there. Yeah. And just even being a female or not being a female, I don't remember feeling as strongly about it until basically until Me Too came out, but also my own, I'm not going to call it success yet because I'm really not all the way through. But I do take a step back and realize like, wow, I'm the boss. One of them. And
yeah. Say it again.
We built something here.
Say it louder for the people in the back.
Yes. The boss.
Yeah. That's cool. It's great.
It didn't occur to me until recently. And, you know, then I spoke at Women in Tech and Women in Media, and it's more prevalent. And also then being the difference is being pointed out. And like I said, filtering everything through that lens has been a journey, not to make this like a therapy session, but
it's okay. We're here.
I feel like we're all reevaluating what we think and what we feel,
right?
And why about everything in this country and the world. So that's been part of it. But at the beginning, no, I don't really remember feeling that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that because, as you know, there's so much discussion and definitely a positive direction as a whole, whether it's, you know, more female founders and executives getting funded, more funds sort of being oriented around the space. I'm friends with a lot of people that are kind of driving that forward, but I do appreciate your sort of, I don't know the right way to frame this, but you'll get it. It's like you were kind of aware, but not aware, but it wasn't like a fixated thing for you. It seems like you've just had your hands full juggling everything, you know, kind of day in, day out, that hasn't been like a super high awareness. So very interesting.
Right.
Yeah. What would you say was maybe one of the harder lessons or experiences, either through kind of IBM, Yahoo, or Booster?
I've learned a lot about myself and communication, especially with clients. I run customer success and product, and there's a unique marriage there that you can think product is deeply technical, but it's also about building the things that are important to clients. And on one of your earlier shows, I can't remember who it was a man who said, I run product and my job is disappointing people.
It sounds like that, something like that would have come out of like Ari Paparo's mouth.
Maybe. I can't remember who it was, but the quote stuck with me.
Yeah, no, that's good. I will look that up, I promise. That sounds like Ari, but who knows?
And so learning how to deliver messages that are difficult and might be disappointing and realizing that people actually don't mind hearing bad news. They just don't like silence.
Yes.
So facing up to, well, this is the facts. Here's what we're doing. Here's why.
Yeah.
Here's how it will impact you. And making that a habit. It seems so obvious, but man, try it. It's not easy.
Why?
Why isn't it easy?
Yeah.
Because I definitely take personal responsibility for it. So I feel like what I'm saying is I am disappointing you.
Right. Right.
which I think is a quality I look for in the people we hire, because I think if you are passionate about something, if you take personal responsibility, usually the quality of your work product is higher.
Katie,
but
you
the
mentioned,
cost of it is yeah. that it it's scarier.
Katie, you've mentioned people a bunch of times, so I just feel like I have to kind of go on to this point. But as you think about hiring people or your interview process or anything that you have identified as sort of pattern recognition or traits as it relates to your kind of rising stars or your best people?
I think about this all the time because I want there to be a Forbes article where it's like, here's Katie Schuele's number one interview question, or like the old story of taking somebody out to breakfast and see if they salt their eggs.
Sure.
That's, you know, and I have yet to uncover what this is for me. But Patrick and I have talked about this a lot. And we know that one very boring but true thing that we're looking for people is core skill set operational thinkers. So are you scared of a spreadsheet? I don't care if what department you're in, but do you understand just basic organization and operations of like planning process, managing stuff? Because if without that, you can be the best salesperson in the world, the most visionary product person. But if you don't have those core operations, at least in this company, you're going to have a hard time, because that's right. the language that we speak. But then the other thing that I'm trying to, the more romantic thing I'm trying to suss out when I interview people is, do they want to be here?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's weird interview process because I'm supposed to be asking about them, but I find myself asking like, what was your best day at work?
Yeah.
What's your best job that you can imagine? And if it aligns with what we have, then I think we have somebody.
You know, it's funny, Katie, I so appreciate you saying that, because I have, that's something that's come out of my mouth many, many times, even, you know, running my own companies, which is like, some of the best people that won the employee, like when we had these awards and the employees would vote for it, and me and the other co-founder, Michael Burke, would step out of it. And when you look back and you're like, what's the commonality between, you know, this person or that person? They really wanted to be there. Like, and the other thing I've observed, different time, different space, monetizing apps versus kind of, you know, where Booster is. But I've also found that sometimes if you look too hard at this is from my experience, specific skill sets to fit that role versus give somebody the opportunity.
Yes.
If you know what I mean? Like bringing that broadcast local radio guy into selling social media, monetizing fucking Facebook apps in 07, they were like, oh my, they just wanted he or she just wanted the opportunity, combined with, I really want to be there. And then the other thing I learned or observed, but curious from your reaction, when you have a core hub of sort of, you know, fanatics, if you will, your top people that are just really drinking the Kool-Aid and bleeding the colors of your, you know, then you can put them in sort of the interview conversation piece. They've already set the culture. Like if you and Patrick are the first pillars, right? Mm-hmm. Then you have these other people. And then ideally, if this thing works well, it's really not the need of a CEO, of co-founders to push that forward. It happens very organically through your core leadership, you know, through those next hires. They kind of see like, oh, this is how we operate here. Like, I forget what you just said about operational mindset, you know. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I think that's so true. We have mugs at Booster from the early customer success team that say Booster Unicorn School. And that's because when you're small, you have to do every job. You know, there were like, we had three people on the customer success team, and they had to onboard clients, do the data migration, do the training, do the support. And then the one person said, if I have to do another data migration, I'm going to kill myself. And another person said, if I have to talk to another client, I'm going to kill myself. I just want to do the data. And all of these people have since grown their functions. One is a data solutions lead. The other built out our in-app help, which is our support, absolute differentiator. The other was an account manager and now runs all of our integrations. And these are not things that they were born doing when they came to Booster, but they just had a propensity. They liked it and we let them go and they've just gone crazy. And I if you ask me what one of the next challenges will be, by nature of getting bigger, we have more riding on Booster. It's harder to make decisions like that, right? I can't go to the board and be like, we found this really up-and-comer who has the attributes we love and the curiosity and the drive and the hunger. They're gonna be like, can you just hire the one that did that already?
Exactly.
And then what happens to the magic, you know?
It's funny, Katie, you said something that made me think how in organizations that have engineering and product and sales, which Booster clearly does, and my organization did, and many do, that there's always tension. There's always a wedge. And you said something that made me think how there could almost be some level of, you know, education or just understanding. Because once you understand what other people do, that potentially can sort of drive a greater respect or appreciation, even though I say that and I kind of sound like I'm full of shit because I think engineers will always hate salespeople and salespeople always think that engineering and product people deliver stuff too slowly.
I don't know. We had the most inspiring meeting a week ago about tightening up the speed of our platform, which I've never said, but we are a CRM and order management system made for media. So we're a platform just for any company that monetizes by selling ads in the media space. You can do revenue management through Booster. Said in a very short way, we're like Salesforce for media. And then we built an order management system on top of it, because after you sell it, you have to deliver it.
Right.
And we had a meeting last week where we want to just make sure that our performance is tight and the speed is fast. So if you click on something, it's fast, it hits our KPIs. And that's a tall order, right? Because every time you click on something, there could be five different reasons why it's not super fast. Maybe it's your internet, maybe the query that it's pinging is not optimized, blah, 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 caching, everything. And we got on a call with the engineering leads, the customer success, and product, and they rarely talk directly to each other.
Yeah.
And everybody put forth, hey, this is something I've noticed we could optimize. And I was like, this is the best meeting I've been to in
years. Yes. How did this happen?
It was so fun.
Yeah, it's nice when that happens. Katie, I have one more question before we come up on time here is, as you're coming out of the summer, both kind of personally, but also in your role as co-founder of Booster, what have you learned and what will you guys incorporate as you kind of march forward and remote work, not remote, different sort of insight or appreciation of how difficult the last year has been that you think may make you guys stronger?
Yeah, we don't know what the answer is like everybody else. Two things are true at the same time. Productivity working from home went through the roof so high that we had to force people to take time off. So we're doing summer Fridays and you have to take every other Friday off. I think people have settled down into a normal, healthy work boundary. But by the same token, the joy was missing a lot from work. So sitting next to someone talking about how we watched The Bachelor last night and a problem comes over from a client and you just peek over to someone's screen and you're like, oh, that's because that number wasn't in there. And you can solve that problem in like a minute.
Yeah.
When you're not next to each other, it's like, well, let's get on a Zoom. It's 18 Slacks. Maybe you've miscommunicated on the Slack. And that's not fun anymore. So work is just problems rather than joint problem solving.
Yeah.
So ideally we want to go back to the office, but I'm a person too. And I don't want to go back on the hamster wheel of going to the office every day.
Right.
So I don't know, to be continued.
Yeah. You'll figure that out soon. Katie, I'm curious to get what you believe your superpower is. I feel like there's a level of being calm and steady. I sense humble as well. But I think the calm, steady social awareness kind of EQ, IQ, as much as I've heard you talk about your people skills and how you interview and just kind of this rational calmness, and I know I keep coming back to it, that's what I'm kind of gravitating to, which is a really important skill set where most people don't have. That's kind of where I want to go. What do you think? How did I do?
Honestly, I prepared for this. because I listen to the show and that's who I am. I prepare. Yeah. And I would have told you that my superpower is a weird backhanded compliment I got in my consulting days when I was still a junior consultant. The head partner said, "Well, Katie, we really wanted you on this project because you don't have to know what you're doing in order to pick up and start doing it." And I was like, okay. I mean, I guess, but that's been true, right? I picked up a product, joined Booster. None of this I was ever qualified for, but if you just pick it up and start doing it, you can. I would have said that was my answer, but all of your questions have gone the way with what you've picked up on, which is, I think, maybe just the attitude is my superpower. It's hard to get me down.
I like that. It's your attitude.
It didn't come through today, but I'm very funny.
No, actually, Katie, you are. I did not realize that. And I would not, people that know me, I don't just say this. You are very dry, which is totally up my alley, which is surprising because German French doesn't really give me the impression no one's funny from Germany or France. So like, you're very dry and I picked up on it. I'm trying to think of a good comp from like a actress celebrity style that has that sort of like dry humor, but doesn't break a smile. It's great. We need to hang out more because that's definitely my jam. Katie, I've really enjoyed finally getting you on this show and spending time with you beyond the professional side that we have together through the fund and through our investment in Booster. Just really fun to watch you navigate the ups and the downs, building a great company, being a mom, moving, and sort of tracking your progress. It's been a lot of fun and appreciate everything that you're doing and really glad that you could share your learnings and insights from your professional career.
Thank you, Chris. I don't think I've spoken about myself this much in ages.
Well, maybe there is an ongoing therapy session for both of us.
Yes.
We can do that here, but it's nice. And it's nice to take a break and do that. So do appreciate
it. Are people asking you enough questions?
You know what? You got to invite, I got to be invited to that other show, but there's probably
my podcast with Todd.
There's probably some unpacking. I bet you're going to have a nice glass of wine tonight and you're going to feel like some open, jokes aside, it's nice to, I think it's always healthy. Everyone has something to unpack. Everyone has things to talk about. There isn't enough of that. And there's no question I need to do it. So
yeah, I'll leave you with this. We did a happy hour last night. And I live obviously with the children and my boyfriend who I've known since high school, and we're very good friends. And we've just spent the pandemic only talking to each other. And I realize that I'm probably really boring right now. I was listening to myself talk at this happy hour with I realized I wanted to say something that needs to be caveated because it's an inside joke between Todd and I who have just been alone for like a year and a half.
Yes. No, it's true.
We're all out of practice with how to speak in social situations. I can speak at work.
Yes.
I can speak at home, but at the bar, I'm like, wow, I am very lame.
let's fix that. Okay. In person for all. So with that, everyone, thank you for listening to this episode of Superpowers Podcast. Katie, thanks for joining. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Chris. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode, everyone. New episodes of the Superpowers Podcast are released twice a month. So please subscribe and follow us on our website to get notified on future shows. Superpowers, what's yours?
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.